Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Why was the general not around for the first hour of the John and Lance show? Wrong answers only. Eric says he had to take his wife to the airport. That's a weird wrong answer. 4-3-2-1, he was late this morning because he was getting the inside scoop about J.J. Watt. Could have taken him that long. 4-4-8-5, didn't realize that was McClain. Thought Lance was doing that voice the whole show.
Okay.
That's pretty good. That's not bad. Well, wrong answers only. Why was McClain? Why did he only do 8 to 7? Or was he in the 7 to 8 o'clock hour? All right. Is he a Yankee or is he a what, Brian McDonald?
All right. The game we are playing today, and some music will kick in here in a second to set the mood for it, the ambiance, if you will. But is this person a New York Yankee or a Yankee general from the Civil War?
Oh, wow.
That is our game today. New York Yankee player. At current, I'm not going back to, you know, the Murderers Row and Babe Ruth and all that.
Roster. That's the rule.
Yeah, yeah. Current roster. New York Yankee or Yankee general from the Civil War. All right. Name number one. And we'll go Joel first here, and then we'll switch on either other one. All right. First one, Joel. Michael Tonkin. Is that a real Yankee player or a Yankee general from the Civil War?
I suck at this game, by the way. I'm going to say Yankee.
What was his? Which kind
Michael
of Yankee?
Tonkin. I'm going to say it sounds like he's a pitcher.
Okay.
Can we get a spelling on that?
The last name?
Yeah, what? Tonkin?
T-O-N-K-I-N. Tonkin.
Yeah, I think he's a pitcher. I think he's a pitcher for the Yankees.
You are both correct. Got one. That is a Yankees relief pitcher. Very good. All right.
Nice.
Number two, Nicholas Burdi. And Burdi is spelled B-U-R-D-I.
Ooh.
Is that a Yankee general or a Yankee player?
It's very, very tough. I'm going to say he is a Yankee player.
Joel?
The spelling throws me off if he would be a general. But I'm going to go with it. I'm going to say general.
Jeremy is correct. Yeah. Joel is incorrect. That is another Yankees relief pitcher.
He went to Louisville, actually. I called one of his baseball games, but I was playing dumb because of game strategy.
Very nice. You did what I didn't do during the Guardians game. Okay. Yes, good job. All right, number three, Joseph Bailey. Joel, you're first here. Is this
general?
Oh, this is a general?
General,
okay.
Joseph Bailey.
All right.
I thought this guy was a sportscaster at Channel 13.
There's a lot of hair grease.
I am not going with that person. So, Jeremy, is this a Yankee general or a Yankees player?
Bailey. I've never heard of this guy, and I'm more of a sportstorian than a historian, so I'm going to go general.
You are both correct. Yes. That is a brigadier general, one of the 15 officers to receive a, quote, thanks of Congress from his actions in the Civil War.
Crazy.
His back of the Civil War card. That's
is
right.
John McClane one of these?
No, John McClane's not one.
Homer Bailey was the pitcher for the Reds.
Yeah,
I want to say
Reds
he
pitcher.
Was from Texas, too.
I think that's right.
Yeah, he bounced around a
Did
little bit.
Did he throw
bit.
A no-no?
Maybe.
I don't remember.
He was a high school arm that was like a top 15 draft pick.
Yeah. He was definitely top half of the first round draft pick, for sure. All right, number four, Diego Archuleta. Is that a Yankee general or a Yankee player? Jeremy's first here.
Diego Archuleta. Brian's getting tricky here. I think that this is a general.
Joel?
Yeah, I think that's a trap because it sounds like a baseball name. I'm going to say general.
You were both correct. Yeah, I was trying to trick you a little bit.
Yeah. He was playing. I knew he was playing it.
David Archuleta, Brigadier General, and he fought at the Battle of Valverde.
His grandson Adam was a heck of a player.
I thought he said, did you say David or Diego?
Oh, did I say David? The name is Diego.
Oh, you said Diego.
If I said David
time.
Later, yeah. I messed up.
How many of these do we have?
I've got up to 9, but we don't have to do all of them.
Best of 7, baseball.
You're up 1.
Best of 7? Okay.
Yeah. Best of 7. How many have we done?
Jeremy's up 1.
Yeah. Jeremy, you've got, I think you've got all of them right, haven't you?
How many have we done?
We've done 4.
Okay, yeah.
I believe Jeremy's got all of them right. Joel's missed 1. Okay. So that's where we stand currently. All right. Number 5, Edward Ferraro.
Who's up?
You're up.
Joel, you are. Edward Ferraro. Spelling F-E-R-R-E-R-O.
Ooh, E-R. Not that that matters, Geraldine Ferraro. I'm going to go general.
Okay, and Jeremy?
Hey, I've never heard of him, so I'm going to lean general, too.
You guys are doing well at this. Yeah, he is a former New York Dance at School instructor who turned into a major general during the Civil War.
He was a dancer?
Wait, he was a dance
general?
Instructor first?
Yep, he was a dancer. He owned a New York dance school, and he was an instructor there, and he owned the school, and then he became a major
fights?
General.
This guy was winless in all his battles, I bet.
Getting in too many fights about the dance instructor thing.
So according to his wiki page, he had some medals and some honors, so he apparently did well. I'm not sure what he taught the soldiers, but he apparently did it well.
Who's right. that big, the dance, like the Ed Astaire? Is it Ed Astaire?
Fred Astaire.
Yeah, Fred Astaire.
Fred Astaire Dance Schools.
Yeah, Fred Astaire. Astaire.
Could you imagine Fred Astaire, Commander-in-Chief?
Apparently we should look that way. learn from our history. All right. So Jeremy's 5-0, Joel's 4-1. You guys
Shut
are
up,
kicking
Brian.
My ass.
Yeah.
All right, number 6, Victor Gonzalez. Yankees player or Yankee general from the Civil War? And this one is Jeremy first.
You didn't throw in a guy who was under Santa Anna?
No.
Okay.
These are all generals in the Civil War. Victor Gonzalez.
I feel like you're tricking us again. I'm going to go general.
Joel?
See, I'm thinking he's tricking us, so therefore I'm thinking that he's going to go general. Because it sounds like it should be a baseball name.
Yeah, that's what I said.
So you're both going general?
Yeah.
No, wait. I'm... I have to... How many are left?
This is number 6. You're starting to have a Princess Bride moment
baseball.
Here.
Baseball.
Yeah, you have to. Game
All right.
I have to.
Okay, well, Joel, you have forced yourself into a tie. That is a Yankees relief pitcher.
Right, what did he play?
He's a relief pitcher.
Oh, all these relief pitchers.
Yeah, he's a relief pitcher. All right, so this is number 7. You guys are both tied at 5-1. Last one, Cassius Clay.
Stop
this is,
it.
This is Joel first.
General.
That is a Yankee general from the Civil War. Cassius Clay. He was a major general, and he was in charge of the defense of Washington, D.C.
C-A-S-I-U-S?
Spelled exactly like Cassius Clay. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Can I just tell you one more?
We need a tiebreaker.
Oh, I guess we do need a tiebreaker. All right, we'll keep going. All right, next one on the list.
Sudden death.
All right. Abner Doubleday.
It has to be a present Yankee.
Abner Doubleday. This is Jeremy first. Is this a Civil
general.
War?
Yeah, general.
Yes.
There's no Abner Doubleday.
That is
in the now.
Yeah, the Abner Doubleday. He was a major general and apparently was the first one to aim a cannon to return fire in the first battle of the Civil War at Fort Sumter. All right, so we're still tied. We got one more. And this is all I got. So if we're still tied here, then we're done anyway.
All right.
This is the full name. 3 names here. First, middle, last name. Thomas Gamble Pitcher. Joel?
Who's up?
Huh?
I'm up.
You're up.
Yeah, you're up.
He's another general.
Yeah, I got to go general too, unfortunately.
That is correct. Thomas Gamble Pitcher. It was the name too good. I couldn't pass it up. He was a brigadier general, and he led the defense of Harper's Ferry.
And now, as a sign of baseball things to come, we're going to end it in a tie.
Yeah, I couldn't resist the guy actually named a pitcher, especially since I used all those relief pitchers early. And his middle name was Gamble. We had the show A thing. It was
so
too good to pass up.
Abner Doubleday was a general that played baseball.
How
do you know that?
Yeah,
That's crazy.
Yep.
How do you know that, Blinkers?
Because he said it.
Oh, okay. You weren't on
the
Google machine?
Oh, you know, I saw him play. You're right. Yeah, I knew you were
fishing
for there.
Actually, I wouldn't even go in there. I was seeing if you were Googling while we were playing.
Abner Doubleday? Okay.
What are
I wouldn't know that.
Wasn't he? I think he didn't. He eventually own a team.
I feel like I don't
he
know.
Did. What are some of the stats on the back of the Civil War card?
Well, maybe he did own a team and then demanded to be the general manager, too. Sound familiar?
What I did know about Abner Doubleday as I was researching this morning, apparently there's a lot of myth-busting going along about if he actually invented the game of baseball.
I think at Navy, right?
I don't remember where he was, but there's apparently a lot of baseball stories that claim that even like when Abner Doubleday died, like it wasn't part of his obituary. If you talk to the man himself, he never claimed to have it. It was just some myth that got pushed upon him, later on.
So he went to a school where we played at U of H, and I remember researching Abner Doubleday, and I remember the story about how some credit him to invent baseball.
So,
I remember doing the prep on this, actually.
So Abner Doubleday, supposedly, invented baseball. James Naismith created basketball. Who created football?
I don't know.
There's not a prevalent name like the other two sports.
Yeah, Doubleday. That's why the Hall of Fame is in.
It is. That is correct. Yeah. Apparently, he did it. First started playing was in Cooperstown on a farm. And apparently the reason why he's given, partially credit for it is even though someone might have played the game before him, the rules they came up with in New York are kind of what were adopted as like the modern rules that we play with, in what we know as Major League Baseball. So that's why he's given credit for it. But they weren't the actual first people to start playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember doing prep on Abner Doubleday, oddly enough. Interesting. Someone texted in and said that music is from the Revolutionary War, Brian. So
it is. Well, I literally Googled Civil War drum and fife music. So if you're going to blame anyone, blame Google. That's what the music is titled.
Your lack of war music knowledge disgusts me.
If you want to fact check it, go ahead. That was literally what
the
YouTube video was called.
No, I believe what you said, but you didn't pick up on it, and that insults me. As an American. 5315, wrong answers only. Why was McClain not here from 7 to 8? He was too busy solving riddles from Simon with Samuel L. Jackson. I don't really get that. Nope. And Wheatstraw said McClain was late because he was busy annoying on the other station he annoys on. Sheesh, that's going into mean
according
text.
To
Pop Warner.
According to history.com, the American football has ancient origins, but in the late 19th century, Walter Camp helped shape football, the American kind, into the sport we know today. Isn't there a postseason award named after Walter Camp?
Pretty sure. There's also a website that uses Walter Camp. I look at a lot of mock drafts from there.
Okay.
Like, I've heard of Walter Camp. Somebody said it was Pop Warner on the text line.
Well, that makes sense, but
someone else said Walter Camp is given credit for football.
Yeah.
And this says Frog was invented by Lance Zierlein and pickleball is goofy. All right. Joe Mixon. Where is he being drafted right now in fantasy football drafts? And does it stack up on where he ranks amongst the best running backs in the NFL? And is this encouraging, discouraging, who is ahead behind him? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Wrong answers only. Why was the general not here from 7 to 8 today? 713-780-3776. Are we going to get in trouble for doing this?
Why?
I don't know.
I don't see any reason why you would.
I'm a believer in asking for forgiveness, not permission, so...
I got a good one that just came to me that I probably shouldn't say because
let's see it. Let's hear it.
He was fighting the Battle of the Bulge.
That was good.
Yeah.
In what way?
Yeah, it's your personal opinion that I
great. Grade the joke. 713-780-3776. Brian,
I'm sorry. Joel was very proud of that
I
one.
Was.
he set it up and everything.
I know you can't see him, but when he hit that line, man, he was very, very proud
of
it.
Yeah,
I don't want to grade it. I don't want to grade it.
I'm used to it.
I don't want to grade it.
No, you were comments so, from you guys every day.
You were
it's
so
fine.
Proud of it. I don't want to grade it. I don't want to grade it.
I give it a 2.8.
Maybe John McClain was hanging out with Rashee Rice.
At the club?
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
Yeah, beating, did you hear that?
Beating, Brian told me in my ear he was beating up a photographer.
Yeah, so apparently sometime Monday night he was at a Dallas club and he's now being investigated for punching a photographer.
Starting to think Rashee Rice isn't a great person.
Sounds like Xavier Worthy, stock up.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's let the justice system do its thing, but this doesn't have this doesn't sound great for Rashee Rice, huh?
No, if this becomes a package deal of missteps in the off season, I got a hard time visualizing him being a member of the Chiefs this season.
Yeah, this isn't not great. I don't think I have any Rashee Rice stock though. I don't think I own him anywhere. Which is good, I guess. Anyways, Joe Mixon. Where do you think Joe Mixon ranks amongst running backs in the NFL? Curious both of your thoughts, because I think Blankers thinks higher of Mixon than Brian does.
Yeah, I believe that he's still got a little good football left in him. Again, I was against the extension, but I was pleased for this season. I'm going to say, people are overvaluing everything Texans offense now because of all of the moves. I'm going to say top 12.
Okay. It just occurred to me that I literally wrote it in the rundown.
Guess what? I wasn't going to guess because I already saw what you wrote.
He's RB15 right now in some best ball drafts. Now, I do think that the Texans system and the fact that he doesn't have a lot of competition at his position, I actually think that overinflates his value. If you were just going straight talent and he had like a capable backup, I think he's probably like 18, 19.
I could see that, and you guys are deeper into all the fantasy leagues than I am, but do you think that the receiving yards and the fact that he's still with a guy like CJ too and the CJ's ability to check down and safety valve, that his receiving yards move him higher?
I like your theory. The thought process is sound, but they just have so many receiving options that I don't think that's really there for them. I mean, where is Mixon going to end up in the target order? At best, fifth. So I am obviously behind the three wide receivers and Dalton Schultz. So I don't think. And plus, I don't really see C.J. Stroud. And maybe it was because he thought Devin Singletary wasn't good at this, but he wasn't a big dump-off guy last year anyway. So I think you combine that with Mixon's pecking order as far as targets, and I don't think receiving is going to be a huge part of his profile, especially from a fantasy basis. I wouldn't base the pick of Mixon on his receiving ability.
It's probably why he's 15th, because I think that he gets a little bit of a surge because it's not a crowded backfield. I think he gets a surge because it's going to be a good offense. I think he gets docked a bit because, like you said, he's not going to be one of the top Texans pass targets. And I think fifth is probably where I would have him. I would have him behind the three big receivers and then Schultz. I wonder if there's somebody else who could sneak up on him, like one of the tight ends, whether it's Jordan or Stover, or maybe the fourth receiver like Noah Brown. Like, I wonder if Noah Brown gets more catches/yards through the air than Mixon does. I think it's in play.
If he's healthy all year, because he was obviously hurt a lot. But
yeah, he is a bit injury prone. Cincinnati people, too, said that Mixon was not desirable in passing situations because he was not very good in pass protection. I hope that's not true because, like, okay, well, then who's your third down back? it worries me a little bit. But anyways, he's 15th. Here are the three names before him. RB12 is James Cook. 13 is Pacheco, and 14 is Rashad White. Any objection there?
No. I mean, Rashad White also wasn't very efficient. All three are good receiving backs, though, and they're all much younger. I would probably put – we're talking NFL value, right, not fantasy value?
And fantasy value is going to – it's going to boost somebody who has pass-catching ability.
Okay.
So, like, that's probably why those three guys are ahead of him. Like, well, James Cook I would have ahead of him regardless.
Like, if I'm actually building a roster, like a real roster, not just only looking at it from a fantasy value, I would still have James Cook and Pacheco ahead of Joe Mixon. I think I would take Mixon, though, ahead of I'm forgetting the
Rashad
name.
Rashad White.
Rashad White.
I would, too. I would take Cook, Pacheco, Mixon, White in that order.
Okay.
So that's the only objection I have. You have objection there, Blankers?
No, I don't. I would assume that Gibbs is high on that list.
Jahmyr Gibbs? He'd be much higher than that.
He's RB4.
Okay.
Yeah, your top five is McCaffrey, Bijan, Breece, Jahmyr, and Barkley.
Okay.
Those are your top five.
Yep.
So the four behind Joe Mixon, Kenneth Walker, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, David Montgomery. Should any of those guys be ahead of Mixon?
Name them again.
Kenneth Walker, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, David Montgomery.
I'd put Kenneth Walker ahead of him.
I think Aaron Jones is going to have plenty of opportunities. I don't think he can stay healthy, though. I think Aaron Jones, if he stays healthy, I think he has better numbers than Joe Mixon because he's going to be their go-to. I think they're going to go to him a lot in the receiving game, and he's going to be a weapon for Sam Darnold.
Where do we stand on Alvin Kamara?
Now, I'm not going to say he's completely washed, but that's why I didn't want the Texans. I don't believe he's got a lot left in the tank.
I mean, Joel talked about dump downs. I mean, especially from a fantasy perspective, that's what Alvin Kamara was thriving on last year. Derek Carr just constantly checked it down. I mean, there was one game where Kamara literally had like 13 catches for 30 yards. It was all 1 and 2 yard gains, did nothing with them, but he just kept dumping it down to him over and over again. Yeah, I look at a lot of the names behind him, Kamara and Mixon and Aaron Jones. I don't see a lot of juice left in those guys, obviously all a little bit older. Of the three, I think Aaron Jones has shown to have the most juice, but I'm not really excited about any of them. The one name that's behind him that I would definitely put ahead of Mixon is Kenneth Walker. He's pretty explosive. Doesn't get a lot of receiving work, but when he does, he's shown that he can do something with it. So I like Kenneth Walker a lot.
Yeah, I would go Kenneth Walker if I'm building a team. I would go Kamara over Mixon on fantasy, but not if I'm building a team. I like Kamara's ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, and I think they're going to be trailing in games and have to throw it a lot. But if I was building a team, I wouldn't have him ahead of Mixon. Now, Mixon's only 1 year younger than Kamara, though. Like, so the washed comment, I'm wondering about that. What makes Kamara washed?
I don't have a lot of faith in, you know, just everything that he's been through, too, but I don't have a lot of faith in New Orleans' offense, period. And I think that there'll be more of an opportunity, too, to kind of focus on him. And I don't think Carr's great by any means or any stretch. So I think that at least, you know, I think Mixon's got a better quarterback, and Mixon's going to he's going to get the ball from CJ. And I think that he's got a better offensive coordinator than Kamara. And just watching Kamara play, not as deep of a dive as Brian just did, but even when he got the ball, he used to be so tough to tackle and so elusive. And it just doesn't seem like he's got the same juice.
He was explosive before. Like he when he got the ball, it was like a bolt of lightning.
Yeah.
Like wherever he got the ball, you weren't going to get to him before he picked up 5-6 yards. But you look over the last three seasons, I mean, he's 3.8 per carry, 4.0, 3.7. Like he's not the explosive runner that he was when he took the league by storm.
Yeah. You're sleeping on Spencer Rattler. That's all I'm going to say. You're sleeping on Spencer Rattler.
New Orleans took him?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
No, I didn't even know where he went. I know that there was a lot of buzz around who was going to take Spencer Rattler. I never saw who eventually took him.
Yeah, he's a saint. At least that's his team's name.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Not literally. Maybe proverbial. Yeah, there you go. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Cash it or trash it. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? Keep in mind, a little bit later, we're gonna give away some Greek Fest tickets. You like a good Greek Fest, Brian?
Oh, I love the Greek Fest, especially the Euros. I think I've told you this.
Euros.
I don't know if I told you this story before, but I've actually done one food eating contest. Have you guys ever been in a food eating contest?
No,
I have zero desire to.
No, I didn't really want to, but it was a previous radio. It wasn't the Highway to Hell, but a previous radio station I was at as part of the Greek Fest promotion. They brought up, you know, some of the people from the festival, and we did amongst the radio employees a Euro eating contest that I competed in. I didn't win.
Fully loaded up?
Oh yeah, fully loaded up. We had like 10 minutes. I ate two. I wasn't gonna embarrass myself and just completely gorge. I was. You know what it was, Joel? Is look, I'm not a svelte guy, right? I'm not ripped. I don't have a six pack abs here. So I heard someone in the comment. Or in the back, make a comment, like, oh, big guy's going to take this. I was like, well, all right. What I'm definitely not going to do now is embarrass myself by just, you know, throwing this Euro down my throat before I can even chew it and play off to what he thought. So I took it casual and ate two in 10 minutes.
You won? Or
No, I didn't win. Actually, Charlie Plittle did really well at the time.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember who won. It wasn't Plillo. I think I might have come in last because I only ate two intentionally. But Charlie Plillo was in it.
Charlie can put it away a little bit.
Yeah, I was surprised. Yeah. He's not a big guy, but he put him away. He ate, I think, four in 10 minutes. I don't remember who the winner was, though.
I can't believe that happened. That's insane. All right, cash it or trash it. What are you cashing? What are you trashing next? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word for Bull Shirts. Look, depending on what you're, when you have things going on with your family, with your business and your company, you're always looking for promotional needs. Maybe you got a family reunion coming up and you need a bunch of T-shirts. Maybe you got, you know, a tailgate party and you want to do shirts for that. Or just the fact that from your business perspective, you're always looking for promotional items and tchotchkes, whether it be for a golf tournament, everything from the tent that you set up to all the different things that you pass out. There's only one place to go, and it's Bull Shirts. Bull Shirts, locally owned and operated here in Houston. That means you don't have to ship out and have it shipped to you, and then if there's a problem, wait and send it back and be up against deadlines. They take care of everything right here in Houston. They get it to you in a timely fashion. They've been doing it for over 40 years, and they've been an industry leader since they went into business. Guaranteed to be top-notch quality and service. Like I said, if there's mistakes, they can fix them quickly because they're here right in your backyard. They're trusted so much, they've done championship gear for the Astros and the Rockets. And I know their work when I worked for the Rockets because I knew what all the T-shirts that they were giving away, putting on seats, doing for all the different things that they were doing. They trusted Bull Shirts. That's why you should too. They do it all, and you can check out everything that they could do by going to their website, bull-shirts.com. Tell them we sent you by because they're the best in the business. You can trust them. They're going to give you recommendations. They've got all the things you're looking for, everything from light-up products and all the promotional items for golf tournaments to everything in between. They are fantastic. Take my word for it. Go to bull-shirts.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a Killer Bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Send us your cash-ems or trash-ems. Blankers, what are you cashing? What are you trashing?
I am going to propose to you guys, now that the Minnesota Timberwolves are up 2-0 on Denver and they have become the favorite now in everybody's minds to win the NBA title, that the Minnesota Timberwolves not only will not win the NBA title, they will not even get to the NBA final.
Okay. That's a good one because it's probably 50-50-ish. I wonder what their odds to get to the finals are. Probably, I think, pretty close to even money.
I think if they got there, Boston's better. I think to get there, the teams that they still have to get through, I question them having enough offensive firepower against different teams.
A different performance like yesterday, though. You don't need a ton of firepower. And Anthony Edwards is plenty of offense.
He's unbelievable.
I think they get by Denver. I mean, they're up 2-0. Yep. They won both games in Denver. They would get either OKC or Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
OKC-Minnesota would be a really fun series. Dallas-Minnesota would be a fun series,
Both
too.
Of them would be, but the league would love OKC and Minnesota.
You think so? I mean,
yeah.
Dallas, bigger market.
From a market Luka's perspective, a it's Dallas, but from an exciting, like, changing of the guard, new teams, young teams, the league's all about that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah, I'm going to trash it. I think they get to the finals. I think they finish off Denver. I think they beat the winner of OKC Dallas and get there.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way too. I can't imagine picking against the Timberwolves against the Mavericks. Maybe that's just a carryover from seeing Luka come up small in a few moments in past seasons. And I don't know. I just don't see the Thunder is there yet. So I do think the T-Wolves end up getting to the final. So I'm going to have to trash it.
Trash.
A basketball player, whenever they deliver a pass to a teammate that gets their teammate to the free throw line and they make at least one of the two free throws, should be credited with an assist.
I've been an advocate of this in the past. I'm going to cash this because I think that I fought in the past with people about the fact that they'd have to make both free throws, but I'd be for it. But at the same time,
why do they need to make both free throws? Is there a difference between a 2-point assist and a 3-point assist?
Well, that's a good point. But I think if you only get 1 point out of the possession, that it's tougher for me to give the full assist.
Well, then we need to value the 3-point assist more.
Yeah, you could, but I'll cash it for the simple standpoint of the fact that you shouldn't be punished as the assister in putting them in the position to score, and they would have had they not gotten fouled. So I will cash this.
I will also cash it, but only partially. Like if it's. Now, sorry, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jeremy. Did you specify where on the court they are when the foul occurs?
Does it matter?
Yeah, it should matter. I mean, they're getting them a shot.
Well, the reason I say that, like, I wouldn't be willing to, like, if it's a foul on a jump shot, I don't think I'm willing to assume the jump shot is made. But if it's a foul in the lane, like on a layup or a dunk attempt.
Well, I mean, they're earning a trip to the free throw line, though. They could score 2 points there.
Yeah, they could. I'm just not willing to assume that the jump shot is going to be made. Like, if it's some 20-foot jump shot, and if he's fouled and goes to the line, if, you know, obviously the shot would have been a situation where if he had made it, he would get the assist. I'm just not willing to assume the make from, let's say, 20 feet out. But if you're in the lane, let's say if you're in the paint, I would be in instead of like a dunk or a layup attempt, then yeah. I would definitely be willing to give the assist in that situation.
I guess I don't really understand why you have to assume that the shot's going to be made because you're assisting a player score.
Yeah, but the idea of the assist is you're actually getting points out of the possession. I'm not
sure. Well, if you foul a jump shooter and he shoots two free throws and he makes both free throws, you did that.
No, I'm saying if he goes to the line and misses the free throws, I think it would be dependent upon, because you said if they make one of the two free throws, right?
Yeah, as long as they score. It would be interesting too, though, if they started to value the assist based on the points, like mm-hmm. like a 1 point's a half assist, 2-pointers one assist, and a 3-pointer's an assist and a half. It's a truer scale.
I do think it is.
It's a much truer scale.
Yep.
Like I'm with you in theory. Like it's not the fault of the passer that the basket didn't get made. Like I'm with you in theory. I'm just I differ a little bit on jump shots versus shots in the lane, but I'm with you in theory.
What do you got?
All right, so I think the Houston Texans this year on defense are going to make a massive leap with their pass rush. We know they added Danielle Hunter, they added Danico Autry, Will Anderson. I expect to make a jump from year one to year two, and maybe JJ Watt gets added to the roster. But I think the Houston Texans this year are going to leap up from 15th where they were last year in sacks to lead the league in sacks. How many sacks led the league last year, you might ask? 60 from the Baltimore Ravens. Now, we obviously can't guarantee that number would be 60 again this year, but the Texans were 15th at 47 sacks or 46 sacks. I think you can see Will Anderson as much as double what he did last year, go from 7 to around 13 or 14. I think Danielle Hunter gets you maybe two more from what Jonathan Gernard got you last year. Certainly he did on last year's stats. And then Danico Autry, I think, is going to add, you know, 4 to 5 from what the defensive tackle position that he's replacing from last year. So I think from where they were last year, 15th in the league, about 46 sacks, they get up to number one in the league in sacks this year.
Cash it.
Cash it, Jeremy?
Especially if they sign J.J. Watt.
I think they'll be top three. I don't think that they'll get there. But I think you went low on Autry.
How so?
I think Autry will have at least...
No, I do, too. I said plus.
Oh,
like five.
I thought you said he was going to have 4 or 5.
Yeah, I think he would have 4 or 5 over what the running mate that he, you know, whatever defense tackle you want to plug in from the Texans last year got.
Okay. I think that when they put it all together and everything like that, I think they'll be in the top three. I just don't know if they're going to be the best in the NFL.
8807, do you get an assist for passing to a guy who hits a half-court heave? You do.
Yep.
Yes, you do get an assist there. A couple of texters here. After these NBA playoffs, Anthony Edwards will be the face of the league. Cash it or trash it?
I'm gonna trash it. He'll be one of them. He will not. LeBron's still in the league. I think he'll be back. And there's about four guys that are going to carry the torch, and he'll be one of them. But I don't think he'll be the only one.
If he wins the finals, yes, and I think they will. So I'm gonna cash it. Colt fan, I'm cashing the Colts winning the AFC South. Cash or trash, Colts winning the AFC South.
Trash.
Trash.
I'm going to trash it too, but I think trash. They are one of the top two teams in the division. 4-1-3-3.
Isn't Richardson a big question mark, though? Because we don't know if he's going to be healthy to start the year, and even if he is, like, if he gets hurt at all.
I think he's healthy to start the year, but he only, as Joe likes to point out all the time, he only started and finished one whole game last year.
Yeah, looked pretty good early, though.
Sure did. The Astros never get to 500 this season.
Oh, trash that.
Trash.
Yeah, I'll trash that too.
Trash.
The Texans win the Super Bowl in the 2020s.
Ooh.
So we got what? Six more seasons.
Thanks, Joe. I'm gonna cash that.
Joe would have said the Texans. I'll cash it as well.
Yeah, make it unanimous. I'm cashing it.
Spencer Rattler ends up starting half the season for the Saints.
Trash. He ain't ready.
Cash this. Out of the playoff race. They're going to want to see what the new guys got. I'm going to cash it.
But in the NFC South, are they going to be so far out of it that they're going to be willing to make a move from a quarterback they're paying pretty big money?
Yeah, I can't
Michael
see it.
Penix is going to lead the Falcons to a 13-4 record.
Can't see either one of them.
Cash or trash? One of you said the Texans might be top three in sacks. Who's number one, number two in your opinion? I guess on the team.
Danielle Hunter is one, and Will Anderson Jr. is two.
Yeah, I go Hunter Anderson in that order too.
Yep. Ryan, any argument?
No, I think that's the order.
85% of Astro fans would be more comfortable or rather optimistic if Dusty or AJ were still the manager. Espada seems like he's overmatched at times and leans towards management for lineup flexibility. So cash or trash, 85% of Astro fans would be more optimistic if Dusty or AJ was the manager of the Astros.
I think from a just overall Astros fan perspective, I'll cash it. But for me personally, I'll trash it because you can't blame the manager when the players have been this bad. But I think cash it from the overall Astros fans' perspective, they would feel a lot more comfortable with either one of those guys.
Yeah, I cash this. I think either manager would have a better record than Espada at this point, too. And just confidence that you get back into it over Espada. Because, I mean, there's a very real possibility Espada's not cut out for this. Brian, any different?
No, I completely agree. I think the Astros have a few more wins, and the veteran hand at the wheel, I think, would have Astros fans more confident in the second half turnaround.
All right, so which one of you hates NBA referees?
Me.
All right.
Today.
Blankers hates complaining about refs, but he's going to complain about refs. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. Look, it's real simple, especially guys out there. If as the older you get, you're losing your hair, you're thinning, you've got bald spots, you don't think there's anything you can do about it, it's frustrating, you're contemplating all the gimmicks like the foams or the creams, or you're just contemplating shaving it all off, you don't have to do either one of those things, and you can get your own hair back. And really, it doesn't cost you a single thing to get all the information you need without making any kind of commitment before you do anything drastic like those other things. All I encourage you to do is go to 975hair.com and learn about the NeoGraft procedure, because the NeoGraft procedure is getting your own hair back. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. I was telling some guys at Sam Houston Race Park about this after they heard me do the read the other night. And the more I told them, the more they were interested. And I said, look, as a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a consultation that normally costs $150 for absolutely free. No signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitment. Just a question and answer session where they tell you how the procedure works and what's all behind it, and you ask questions and get answers. If you want to do the procedure, he's the best in the business, bar none. I've had it done with him, and I speak so highly of him. There's no one even close to the same level of confidence that I have in Doc and his staff. But you can get all of it for free just by going to 975hair.com, set up an appointment, go in, ask questions, get answers, and just see if it's something you might consider. I did it. You see the follicles almost instantly the next day. And 95 to 99% of all the follicles, they're going to move from the sides and the back of your head. They're going to be with you for the long haul, probably for the rest of your life. But the bigger key is in 6 to 9 months, when those follicles that aren't going anywhere get stronger and longer and really kind of get really firmly planted into your scalp, you're going to see even better results, and you are going to be even more satisfied with the procedure. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by, because I would not speak for anybody other than Doc Linville for this procedure, because it's a game changer. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN. 97.5. Found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hi, Blankers. Why do you hate referees?
Look, I don't want to be ever considered in the same stratosphere as Ben DuBose and his hatred for all officials, umpires, and referees. But But last night and the last couple nights of the NBA has really kind of pissed me off because of the fact that the NBA needs to let the players decide the game on the floor. And the fact that you have three officials on the floor, too, a lot of the calls that have been made in the last two games last night, and then the previous game, even in the Minnesota game, the technicals on Anthony Edwards and showing out and guys because they do the too small gesture getting teed up. This is the playoffs, and this is big-time basketball where there's a whole lot of stuff being talked, and there's a whole lot of competitive fire, and you're losing an audience that you've struggled to keep and or gain in the last season or two because of the fact that the officials are deciding games and they're getting a lot of calls wrong. Last night was ridiculous in the fact that both coaches for Indiana and New York had to burn challenges on very obvious calls with three officials on the floor just to make sure that they got them right. In one case, they were out of challenges, so a team couldn't use another one on another blown call by the officials. The fact that you either are going to call the game consistently as referees or not. The fact that you called the illegal screen late in the game for Indiana, at that point in the game, you normally let them play. But because all game, if you watched any part of that game, those kind of illegal screens were going on all game long. And the fact that you called it then and then blatantly missed and called a kick, which was non-reviewable when it wasn't a kick, with a tie game and 52 seconds left and a chance for either team to win the game, and it turned into a 3 for New York, which gave them a lead that they never lost, was absolutely inexcusable to me. And then when you watch the Denver game on top of that, when you watch the fact that Rudy Gobert wasn't going to play, so they weren't going to be able to throw the two big seven-footers at the Joker, and Minnesota was relying heavily on Karl Anthony Towns. Karl Anthony Towns got a foul within the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game. They then swallowed their whistle and would not blow another one on Towns on 3 blatant fouls that he committed, allowing Minnesota to not only stay in the game but take control of it. So on top of that, you knew that Mark Davis, the lead official, kind of knew that they were doing him dirty because of the fact that he turned the other cheek on those 3 fouls. And the last one got Mike Malone so heated, he should have been tossed. In a regular season game, he'd have been watching the rest of the game in the locker room. They didn't even give him one technical for going on the floor, getting in Davis's face, throwing his finger in his face, and needing his team to restrain him because of the fact that they knew that they weren't calling the game the way it was supposed to be called. And that is annoying beyond belief to me.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that they didn't call a technical there. I agree with that. Agree about most of what you said. I thought that the plays that were challenged were tough ones to call. Like one was that reach-in foul on Halliburton where he didn't touch him. That got overturned. And then the other was the out-of-bounds play where Brunson dribbled it off the back of the defender's calf and it went out-of-bounds. Which, I mean, it's tough
Nembhard.
To see. I mean, the baseline official's behind, the Brunson there. So it's kind of a difficult one. It's a tough job, and it's a thankless job.
The kick was ridiculous.
The kick was a bad call. Now, these are the best officials in the world, though. So, like, any time that I hear, complaining about officials and referees and umpires, and it's, like, fair to do that, and we can certainly talk about specific calls where they screwed up and didn't get right and blah, 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 because they are critical to the outcomes of the game. I did think that the Knicks had a very favorable whistle in the final minute and a half in that game. Mm-hmm. It felt like every call was going their way that was questionable. But those are the best officials in the world. Go watch college basketball. I don't know you do. Go watch college basketball. They couldn't hold a candle to NBA officials. Go watch the G League. In fact, the best G League officials come to the NBA. Go watch a high school basketball game. So my counterpoint, anytime people complain about officials, and it's fair to talk about one call, but, like, what's the fix? Like, how is this getting better? Make it, systematically better?
So, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I've been adamant about this. That kickball challenge, should be challengeable.
Agreed.
That's one way to fix it. Allow replay to be the final decision maker, especially in the playoffs when the outcome is so hyper important, more so than the regular season. Then the competition committee and others need to get their heads together to say, look, I know those are the regular season rules because we want the game to go speedier and we don't want everything challenged. But particularly in the playoffs, just like the NFL changed their overtime format, you need to get to a system in which the only objective is to get the play called right and allowed the players to decide the outcome, because that's the playoffs and that's what matters most and that's what they should do, because that's inexcusable in a tie game with 52 seconds left that a call could be that big and go, well, you can't challenge it, so our call stands and it's New York's basketball. That's total BS.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a – well, I don't know if I agree with that, actually. Like, me as a viewer – like, I don't care who wins Pacers-Knicks. I probably want the Pacers to win. I don't really like New York sports. But I really don't have a dog in that fight. You know what I mean? Like, would I, the viewer who doesn't have a dog in the fight, would I trade one or two missed calls to shave 15 to 20 minutes of waiting around at the end of that game? I think I would. I think I'd rather live with one or two bad calls than sit around and watch referees look at a monitor for 20 minutes.
See, there's a way to speed up the call process with all that they have with all the monitors and angles. I understand in the regular season, that's fine. It still kind of chaps my ass because of the fact that they miss a lot of calls in the final 2 minutes. But when you watch a play that was that instrumental in the outcome of the game, you got to get that right. I don't think it would take 20 minutes, but that's why I go back to what you and I've discussed in the past. If it's the final minute or the final 2 minutes, all those running out of challenges and stuff should be off the table, and the referees should have the discretion on the close calls to make sure they get them right. The regular, I know it
strategy,
doesn't bother
though,
you because
you know what I mean. Like, I mean, you have how many challenges do you have? You have two challenges.
You have one. If you get it right, you get another one.
Okay, so like, don't get one wrong. Like, you know how critical it is to have in the final minute. Like, keep it in your pocket unless you're 100% sure.
For the regular season,
that's game
I get
theory.
It. But for the playoffs, I can't agree with that, and I don't think it would take that long. But the playoffs, whether you have a vested interest in a team or a player or the outcome, or you're just a casual, I don't think it would take that long. And for the purity of the sport, the end result, just like any umpire, any crew, and any officiating, the objective is to get the call right. It's never more important than the playoffs. And I believe that that's
got to
be...
Is it, though? Or is the objective the entertainment value of the game that's going to lead people to watch its game?
I think you can argue that it might be a combo. At the end of the day, the most important thing is to get the call right so that the players decide the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, like if it's... It's for me. I'm going to sound like a hypocrite here, because if it were the Rockets playing, I 100% agree with you. 100% agree with you. Get the call right. I don't care if you add 15, 20 minutes to the game. Me, when I'm watching like this NBA playoff, where I really don't care who wins. I don't care who wins Minnesota, Denver. I might have a slight lean, depending on the night, depending on the game. I don't really care. I don't care who wins Pacers Knicks. Like, I want to see a good game. I want to be entertained. Would I sacrifice one or two missed calls for a cleaner ending to the game? Me as a neutral observer to this NBA playoff, I would. Yeah. I don't care if there's a missed call or two for teams that I do not care about. Now, if it was the Rockets, I'd be singing a much different tune.
Yeah, but I think just from the purity of the sport, the spirit of the sport, I understand your point of view because of time and because it's about your schedule and your likes and dislikes. But I think just from the purity of the sport standpoint, You don't want to have a team that ends up winning the title on a fluke call or a call that they didn't want to run a reverse or couldn't review. And then all you remember is, oh, that's the year that team won, but they got that call or that call or that happened that everybody remembers. You want to remember, and you also want to see how that game would have ended last night if it was just decided by the players. Like, we might have missed out on a buzzer beater or a couple of big shots.
I agree with that, but there's always going to be the human element to officiating, and they've tried to eliminate it the best way that they can. But if you're a coach, the best way to eliminate the possibility of that happen is make sure you have a challenge left with under a minute to go.
Until like you even said, and you're right, in the final, I would go as far as to say in the final 2.5 to almost 3-4 minutes of the fourth quarter, everything was going the Knicks' way, and you don't have that many challenges, no matter how many calls don't go your way that you know or could see look like they should have been your ball or your call.
Yeah. It's tough. It's a tough game to
appreciate. And the other thing is the whole thing about, we know, look, when is the gesture for too small a technical? Like, or staring a guy down a technical? Like, it's one thing if there's a Draymond Green effect and you think it's going to lead to other things, but this is the playoffs. It's not that soft. Like, a Patrick Beverley or a guy that does the little too small gesture, come on, man. I forget, it was Embiid. Embiid the other night, he did it and didn't get teed. But two guys did it in the Milwaukee-Indiana series, and they both got teed. And it's like, what are we doing consistency-wise?
Well, it's tough. I mean, you have different crews. Like, you have different personalities. You have different officials. They're human beings. Like, they're going to have different characteristics. They're not AI robots. Like, that's what makes it difficult. That's what makes it difficult is you have different human beings that are officiating games. So, like, guy, referee A might be, rabbit-eared. He might be super sensitive and call it. And then you have official B who doesn't care at all and is never going to call it. Like, I don't know how you eliminate that from sport.
But I think that lately the referees have tried to make it too much about themselves. The fact that we could identify, and obviously take me out of it because I was around it too long to know a lot of these guys' names, but the fact that everybody knows Scott Foster, that everybody knows certain officials, it's not because of the fact that they're making great calls. It's because, more times than not, it's because that's the name. It's like the Angel Hernandez. They're getting singled out for the embarrassment of horrible calls.
Yeah, but I hesitate there, though. Like, because a guy made a horrible call doesn't mean he's making the game about himself.
If you look at some of the calls that and you saw the New York-Indiana end, but they're overall
I don't
the
think
playoffs,
that any of those officials were making it about themselves. I thought there was some missed calls there, but I don't think any of them were like, hey, look at me.
But there are some guys that have always and will always make it about themselves as part of it. You're right. Maybe that's the human element too, but it should never be about them. That gets down to the bottom line of what we started the conversation. Let the players on the floor decide the game.
Yeah.
Like that's ridiculous that they played that big a part in that many games in the last week.
It's just, it's difficult though. Like it's easier said than done. It's easier said, let the players play the game is much easier said than done. Cause like it's much easier said than
done. You mentioned the human element. Do you believe that crowd and that New York crowd and that home crowd influence their calls last night late?
I think that it can, yeah.
I think it can too. And that's not supposed to be the case, but
it doesn't have to be every official that's there either. Like the one official who made the call where Brunson tried to throw it off the Pacer and then it ricocheted and hit him, like that's a good gutsy call on the in Madison Square Garden that went against him.
Mm-hmm.
The call that was like the one that you said that had to be reviewed, that was an obvious call where Brunson dribbled it off the back of the defender's calf. Yeah. That he originally made that call against the Knicks. So, like, it kind of goes both ways. Yes, I think officials can be influenced based on the venue, absolutely. I think you see it a lot in college basketball. So, yes, it happens. But there's also other officials who are trolls, and it goes the other way, where they're more willing to make a tough bravado call on the road.
What's your guy in college that makes it all about him? TV?
See, I actually think he's a really good official.
TV Ted?
I've talked to him personally several times. I like TV Ted. I don't think TV Ted's influenced one way or the other. I think he's solid. now, he's at times in the past, some things where, like, he gets in Mick Cronin's face, or he had the thing with the North Carolina player where he turned his back to him. Like, those antics are not, they don't look great.
Right.
I actually think TV Teddy's one of the better officials in college basketball.
But I'm saying those are the kind of guys that the human element, that it's kind of like the overpassion that they put into doing what they do. It's like Joe,
But his isn't about calls. Like he's not influencing the call. It's his antics whenever there's not run a play.
This is
after a dead ball. This is before an inbound. Like it's not influencing the game, making a call one way or the other.
But if Joey Crawford throws Tim Duncan out of the game,
yeah,
he was on the bench chuckling.
Guy. Yeah, he was one of those guys. I agree.
And Jake O'Donnell never reffed another game because he had it out for Clyde, and it was mm-hmm. obvious. And at the end of the year, the league not only suspended him for the playoffs, but then said you'll never ref another game because they went back and started to investigate it further. That's why when you look at the Scott Foster elements, you're right. The human element plays into it, but he denies it, but it's almost no denying that he's got a personal beef with Chris Paul, and so he's looking for him.
See, that's where I would fix things, is I would every single year get rid of the 10% worst officials.
I agree with that.
And I would elevate the 10% best officials wherever you find them, G League, college, wherever. And you have this constant movement where you're getting rid of the worst 10%, you're elevating the best 10%, and you're getting rid of some – and look, you have observers, you have graders, and they're looking for that sort of thing. I think that, to me, is the fix.
I couldn't agree more.
But even if you do that, it's a better model – but they're never going to be perfect.
They're not.
They're going to have critical calls that they miss in big spots because that's life. They're human.
But you're also you're getting someone that's going to stick more to the letter of the law, call the rule the way it's meant to be called, instead of the kind of egos that get built up with years and years of being that official that everybody knows.
That's the part that drives me the craziest. I can live, I'm not going to say I can live with a bad call. I still have, grudges with some bad calls. But the thing, I can understand a bad call. I can live with a guy making a bad call. I'm not going to dislike the person because they make a bad call. I might dislike the call, but it's those people that interject themselves, like a Joe West type, where, okay,
right.
like that's where I really get triggered, because you shouldn't be behaving that way. So have some sort of model, some sort of system where you trim that out. Because I can live with a bad call. I can't live with, like what you're saying, guys that are literally interjecting themselves and trying to make themselves the show. Can't stand that. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So when the Astros were down 3-0 on Sunday, it was the first time all year I didn't think they'd win the division. Do I still feel that way today? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Please, Emily.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, faucets, vanities, doors, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online now through July 18th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.